Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Are we recording?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
Coop left.
Oh, all right. Well, I am so excited that you're here, Joel.
I'm back.
I feel so good. We're all back together, right?
Yeah.
It's just not the same if it's not the three of us, man. You know what I mean?
Without the chaos, it doesn't feel like the same show. The chaos right. that Joel brings to the show is necessary.
Yeah, I was
I'm not even that chaotic. I'm just chilling, dog.
Yeah, well, but
by comparison.
I gotta be able to just tell you to shut the fuck up, you know? It's part of like, that. Yeah, I'm raging against Joel. But yeah, Rage Against the Machine, dude. Cabriolet, Volkswagen Cabriolet convertible, cow seats, dice, rearview mirror hangers, right? Rage Against the Machine, Marlboro Light 100s.
Ooh,
yeah, dude, you gotta keep them long like a baseball bat. You know what I mean?
Well, also, it's like it's pretty much the same price. You get a little extra tobacco.
Yeah, I don't get why you wouldn't. You know what I mean? It's one of those things that, like, why wouldn't you?
How did you? You were the driver of the Volkswagen Cabriolet?
Yeah.
That's so crazy because my buddy from high school, Keebler, got a Volkswagen Cabriolet and we used to get shit-faced in it.
Everybody does, right?
Because you got it for super cheap or
yes.
you got some deal.
Everybody does. I think it was a stick, right?
Yeah, his was a stick too.
If your dad, which I'm lucky enough that my dad like got me a car, right? Not many people, right? It's older, but Cabriolet, convertible, stick shift. I mean,
every single kid in the world should have a shitty car for their first car.
Oh, for sure.
Like
it probably shouldn't be a tin can like the Cabriolet convertible. Maybe a little safer, but definitely a piece of shit. Yeah.
At least a German made car,
yep.
cheap. Like that's a good first car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm. What are we talking about? Sorry. I mean,
This show isn't. Like I always like to talk about.
Yeah. This show isn't. German things that Coop likes.
What was your first car?
Yeah. Hey, what's your favorite cereal?
What's Captain your favorite Crunch? Thing to come out of Germany?
First car? What?
Nazis.
First car?
Mazda B2000 pickup truck. Locks didn't work in it, so the entire time that I was driving it anywhere, I could not leave anything valuable in there. One of my friends didn't learn that lesson. Ended up leaving a bag full of camera equipment that he had borrowed from college in the front seat. And we were
Ooh,
going into a Jack in the Box.
That hurts.
We even saw the guys walking out. And my buddy made a joke just because it was a group of, like, you know, rough looking fellas. Made a joke on the way out like, oh, probably going to steal all my shit out of your truck. Sure enough, as soon as we came out of the Jack in the Box, everything was fucking gone.
They actually did steal everything.
They actually did.
Oh, that feeling, dude. A lot of nostalgic moments. Like
the
that.
Cab was your first car?
Cab was my first car.
Nice. Toyota pickup for me.
Toyota pickup, nice, yeah. dude.
See, I had the Mazda version of the, like, roughly the same pickup. The
we had the cars, like, that matched our, like, the friend group. You know what I mean? Like, our, like,
I had a camper shell
status.
And a
mattress
in the back for my homeless friends.
Yeah. So, like, we had the car that, like, we were supposed to have. Like, I didn't have the BMW, like some of the, you know what I mean?
The rich kids.
Yeah. But anyways, all that's dumb and not helpful. Do you know what I mean? To anyone, to know any of that. But we haven't seen each other in a while. So, you know, we gotta catch up, learn something new about each other after all these years, right? But no.
I'm a Taurus. No, I'm a Leo.
Of course you are.
I had a friend that drove a Taurus when I was in high school. Great car.
No,
great.
We're not doing word association. Okay. Uh-uh. Welcome to Jesse Wiseman's Crime Corner. Yeah.
If Authorities are desperately searching for a killer accused of going on a rampage.
The search for a possible serial killer.
An urgent manhunt for a man authorities believe is behind a triple killing spree.
Police here speculating that a possible serial killer may have struck again.
I told her to get out of the car, and that's when she became afraid, and then I shot her.
I am your host, Jesse Wiseman, and I am joined by my co-hosts, good friends, Coop and Joel. Today, we've got another fun and flirty episode for you that's got all of our favorite things. An excuse to rag on our neighbors to the north. You know we love
Hell
it.
Hell yeah.
Canada. Kind of like America, but just more annoying.
Yeah, just not quite as
good. Not quite as good, but really annoying about it. A hardened detective with a porn star name. Finally,
sick.
We've got a sweet detective name.
I like that.
And the name is fucking amazing.
And a surprise twist that sounds like something straight out of a Martin Scorsese movie. This is the story of Michael and Mr. Big.
Mr. Big, ooh.
I've been
Sex
excited.
In the City.
I have been so fucking excited about doing this episode because the whole story is, it is like a Martin Scorsese movie. It's like we're going to be talking about The Departed.
Yeah, it's bonkers, but I love it. But yeah, so this case is going to have a couple twists and turns. Stay with me, Joel.
Do they die?
How many deaths? How many deaths? We
now
gotta let it.
It
I mean,
for
we
granted.
Have to.
There's gonna be at least one, so we're gonna have to surprise you by making it more than one.
We've got
at least one.
We've got a death. We have one death. Okay.
I have to prepare.
You have to prepare. We have one death, but then we have kind of like an insane way of solving the case that's super fun and flirty. I mean, it literally is fun and flirty.
That's what we do.
Right?
There's literally no other way to it.
There's no other way to describe this than fun and flirty.
Yeah.
All right. Your favorite part, Coop.
Oh, I went. Actually,
talking about Canada, baby.
I actually surprised. I learned something about myself right in this one. It's not just Canada, it's some of the northern states also that I've got an issue with.
Oh, nice. We're lumping some stuff together. We're adding hatred. I like that. Don't take
it.
Away hatred. Add it.
Comes with age.
Yeah, yeah. You're just more curmudgeon.
Oh, God. I already told you last time I'm taking more and more after my grandpa.
Yep. We know.
The Nazi?
Spoiler alert, Joel. Come on. We're going to do his episode later.
Dude, you know what's crazy is my wife actually probably has grandpas that are Nazis.
Coming from that part of the world.
Yeah.
She's got German descent, yeah.
It's the same as like our
I just can't get away
ancestors
from them.
Having slaves. You know what I mean? It's like you were involved in some way. Huh? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Of her family. You were around it. You did what you had to do kind of thing. Same as here.
Yeah.
You needed stuff clean. You needed stuff done around the house and the farm. You know what I mean? You did what everybody else was doing.
God, payroll. That's just way too much for most families to carry.
Everyone's bloodline either leads to slavery or you're a Nazi.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, cheers to that. Let's
good talk. I'm glad
good
to be
talk,
back.
Guys. Yeah, and thank you for staying, the three people that stayed after all that. Go ahead.
Well, the three people watching are going to have a hell of a show this time.
Us?
Cameras aren't rolling, Coop. All right, come on, come on.
Our
it's
story
a long one.
This week takes us to Manitoba, the fifth most populous province in all of Canada. Well, we could spend some time describing the Arctic tundra, grasslands, and boreal forests that make up the landscape of Manitoba. It's much easier to summarize it by telling you the following. Manitoba's economy relies heavily on Minot, North Dakota. To put it bluntly, Manitoba is even less consequential than the fourth largest city in North Dakota.
Whoa.
And if there is one word that can sum up the entirety of North Dakota, it is inconsequential.
Yeah.
If it
weren't
for
you always just like, you go like, oh yeah, that's a state.
Oh,
do you know
yeah,
what I mean?
North Dakota is
if
a
you're
place,
naming
isn't
all
it?
Of them, you go, which one am I missing? North Dakota, always.
What does biome forest mean?
Boreal?
Yeah.
Boreal?
Boreal.
Boreal, I think it's like pine trees or some shit.
No.
I could be wrong. I'm not much of a treeologist. If it weren't for the 1996 Coen Brothers film Fargo, most Americans wouldn't even be able to name a city in North Dakota. In fact, most people probably wouldn't even know it was a state. But we're not here to rag on North Dakota. We're here to rag on Canada.
Yeah.
It may come as a surprise that despite being the Canadian equivalent of North Dakota, Manitoba has a bit of a dark side. In fact, it has the highest homicide rate in all of Canada, rivaled only by the body count of the bloodthirsty canola oil cartels waging war on one another in Saskatchewan. It was in 2002, in the city of Brandon, Manitoba, that a young girl named Erin Chorney suddenly went missing. Her mysterious disappearance threw the local community into chaos as they searched for her across the nation. It also sent her former boyfriend down a dark path into the underbelly of Canada, straight into the arms of a criminal syndicate.
Ooh, buddy, ooh, buddy, now you're in.
Criminal syndicate.
Now you're in, dude.
This is getting wild, right out the gate.
We got him.
I think this is going to be a good one for Joel. I think he's going to like this one.
So do we want to show a picture of Brandon?
Yeah, we got a picture of
Manitoba.
Brandon, if you want to throw it up on screen.
There you go.
Oh,
there's
boy.
Brandon, Manitoba.
I mean, it is, I mean, you you took a picture of the best part, maybe?
That's got to be.
The train tracks.
I'm pretty sure that that's what the entire town looks like.
It looks like Detroit.
Yes, looks like Detroit, absolutely.
But it's a little bit smaller.
Absolutely. So that's the vibe.
That's the overall vibe.
That's the vibe.
Not like it's a big city in terms of Manitoba, but, you know, compared to anything in America, just.
Right. On the evening of Sunday, April 21st, 2002, 18-year-old Erin Chorney, which, Canada, their fucking names, dude.
The fucking names.
Erin Chorney.
Aaron.
Aaron Chorney. Had just finished having a pleasant family dinner with her mother, Debbie, and her younger sister, Leslie. Leslie, right?
Leslie spelled with one I.
With his spelled the Z.
How fucking stupid.
Fucking Canada.
Yeah, it's like almost Leslie, but they just like not quite.
Not
Do you know what I mean?
As the American Leslie.
Yeah, exactly. As the trio settled in to watch Ralph Macchio and Pat Morita beat a dead horse in Karate Kid Part 3. Now, is Karate Kid Part 3 the...
That's the chick one.
It's not. I thought that's what
not,
it was. We were
okay.
just talking about that the other day.
I thought
it's
it was
the
Swank.
Swank one. It's
oh, that's the
one,
fourth one.
Yeah, that's the next Karate Kid.
Okay,
that
so it's kind of
really
same. Karate Kid Part 3 is the same cast of characters kind of thing?
Yeah, but new director. So, you know.
No one saw it.
Yeah, pretty random to want to sit down and watch Karate Kid Part 3, right?
Yeah.
So anyways, that's what they were doing.
I like the one with Will Smith's kid and Jackie Chan when they remade it. It was actually good.
I don't recognize that as a Karate Kid.
It was actually good, though.
That's really good.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, Joel, so did you call it like kicking dude?
You were digging yourself a
hole. Oh, kicking
you're,
dudes.
I'm sorry, you're wrong.
Do you know what I mean?
No, no, no. You,
kicking dudes.
I'm sorry, you're right. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right. Jesus. I've been gone too long.
Kenpo. Kenpo. Kenpo kids.
Kenpo kids?
I was just naming like a style of karate. Yeah.
Kenpo's karate?
Kenpo.
Is Kenpo? What is Kenpo?
Kenpo karate.
Is that what you trained in?
Yep.
That's what she uses to beat our ass every week.
You fade in my picture from the karate thing, two braids. You know that one?
Yeah, to clips from Kill Bill.
Anyway, so that's what they're doing. They're just chilling, family evening. Erin received a phone call. After finishing the call, she told her mother and sister that she had been invited to go get coffee with a few of her friends, but would be back later that evening. She said goodbye to her mother and walked outside with Leslie to wait for her ride. Erin had always been a social butterfly. The attractive, athletic, and outgoing young woman had built up a large social circle that never left her with a shortage of plans. And she's 18, so, you know, you're just figuring stuff out. She played multiple sports, loved to write stories, and had dreams of one day becoming an author.
Did she play softball?
I would guess.
Probably softball.
There's only a couple sports that gals can play.
Considering her dating choices, maybe not softball, but definitely soccer. I mean, hockey, it's Canada.
She had a boyfriend.
Oh, hockey, yeah.
Yeah.
Hockey.
So maybe she had a girlfriend, too.
So she had dreams of one day becoming an author. Her friendly nature and energetic personality made her the life of any party she attended. On top of everything else, Joel, she also had a smile that some might say...
No!
Joel, it could light up a room, Joel. I'm so sorry. And let's
She's gonna die!
You don't know that, bud. She could just be awesome.
Maybe.
Anyways.
Maybe, but the chances on this show...
Let's look at this smile. Let's look at the smile. Yeah, we've got a picture of Aaron. See, fun. 18, sports, writing, okay. Partying, yeah. Right?
You know, she honestly looks like almost every girl in my hometown.
Yes.
She's just like, not hot enough that she might survive this.
Yeah, but if you're in Brandon...
God damn, Joel. No, but look at the smile.
Whoops. Look at the smile.
It's a good smile.
It's literally lighting up that... picture.
I think she's pretty.
We have another picture too.
We got one more picture of her.
This one?
Yeah, so this is her girl. And Gam Gam. She's dyed the hair blonde here. She's got all those little, you know, when people are doing, gals were doing the many buns everywhere or like lots of clips all over. She just looks like a normal.
Grandma was hot.
Oh, in her day?
Oh, yeah.
If we could find a picture of Gam Gam back in the day, we would be like, hello.
I'll look into it.
Yeah, she's almost
Don't waste too much time. We've got a show
for
sure.
She's got like an Adrienne Curry kind of thing going for her. She probably could have been a model when she was younger.
Yeah.
Yeah, my natural instincts are leaning towards the G-Mov.
Like this was...
Who I would sexually harass.
This was me back then. You know what I mean? You play sports, you party a little bit. You keep some walking around weight because you like to have fun. You like to have fun. You know what I mean? You're not fat. You're just like not, if you're not doing your sport, the muscle turns, you know, it just is what it is. So she kind of looks like, you know.
There's a certain kind of people that gain the freshman 15 before they're freshmen in college. And those are the people that like to fucking party.
Yeah. Like if you looked at that girl, you'd be like, she has fun. It's not like she's like not doing something because she needs to get up early for yoga or you know what I mean? She's having a good time.
Yeah, she has a good time, and she's in better shape than I've ever been in. So
exactly right. So that's Aaron.
A-Rod. I'll let that one go.
Yeah.
Well, it is spelled with an I this time. Not long after leaving her mother's apartment, a white minivan arrived to pick up Aaron. She said a quick goodbye to her sister, climbed in the back of the van, and drove away. Aaron hadn't been entirely truthful about her plans for that evening. She wasn't getting coffee at fucking midnight? Yeah.
Skipping out on watching Karate Kid 3 to go get coffee?
Nobody's going to do that.
Hey, Mom, some friends want me to study. What? It's fucking Friday, midnight. Anyway, go ahead.
You know, back in Santa Barbara, they had a bar that was called Study Hall.
I know.
Oh,
it's brilliant.
She wasn't actually going out for coffee with some friends, but instead meeting up with her 21-year-old ex-boyfriend, Michael Bridges. She and Michael had dated off and on over the previous year, but had finally broken up for good when they realized that constantly fighting wasn't a strong basis for a romantic relationship. I think they just didn't give it enough time, honestly.
Yeah, because it could be fun if you figure out the balance.
They were young.
Yeah.
Although no longer a couple, Aaron and Michael had agreed to remain friends and still saw one another on a regular basis. Aaron's family had never really approved of her relationship with Michael. He was older than her, standoffish, and refused to take part in any chorny family events, which, aside from the age part, standoffish and refusing to take part in any family events, me to a T.
Isn't that every dude?
I would think age? So.
When they first met him, he seemed fine, you know, polite, fine. And then as with anything, he started
after he's having to showing put up with his this shit.
Then
put
he
up
started
with Aaron's party attitude.
I found a picture of her grandma, by the way, when she was young. You want to see it?
Oh yeah, what's this gonna be?
No, it's not.
I just looked up hot chicks from the '50s.
And that's like AI version too, anyway.
Yeah, the only girl that looked like that from the '50s was like Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah.
How dare you?
So he was older than her, standoffish, and refused to take part in any charming family events. The relationship had also been unhealthy for Erin, causing her to spend less time with her family and more time getting drunk at parties. The breakup itself sent Erin down a dark path, leading her to continue drinking heavily and needing prescription antidepressants. But as we have said before, love is blind and also kind of retarded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially at that age.
Oh, it's
you don't know.
Even more retarded at that age.
You just don't know what you don't know. So, again, when they first met him, they were only dating for about a year, right? But when they first met him, he's fine. You know, nice enough. And then the wheels start, you know, the cracks start to show. And then the family's kind of like, I don't know about this. But at that point, with a child, you can't just say no. Because then they're going to want to.
It's going to make it
even more. So you kind of just have to be like, hey, so cool, but, you know.
As Rage Against the Machine said, fuck you, I won't do what you tell me.
Exactly. After being picked up from her mother's apartment, Erin spent time hanging out with Michael and his friend.
Good luck with
Bonthavi
this
one. Bonthavi Segmani. Bonthavi?
My guess was Bonthavi Segmani.
Bonthavi Segmani.
Okay,
there's no way that's it.
Okay, so
Jesse was closer in my mind.
I tried to figure this shit out. That name, Bonthavi Segmani, where do you think that comes from?
Sounds Italian or something.
Italian?
No, it sounds like Middle Eastern.
Okay, I was going to say Indian. Mm. It's Germanic.
Mm. Really?
I was the closest.
Okay.
In terms of the location, yeah, Joel, you actually were the closest. Actually, it's Germanic, and I think some of it does trace back to Italy.
Yeah, I know.
But it just sounds too ethnic for my taste, so I figured it was India.
Yeah. Aside from having a name that sounds like a chant from a gypsy curse, Segmani was also a certified third wheel. Once he read the writing on the wall, he excused himself and went home so Erin and Michael could have some alone time.
Good friend.
Yeah, that's nice. Erin and Michael spent the evening at his house talking about their dating lives while she trimmed his hair. Around 11 p.m., she received a call inviting her to a house party, which obviously sounded like more fun than listening to her ex-boyfriend complain about women while you give him a bowl cut. So at roughly 11:30 p.m., Erin excused herself and left to go on her next adventure. From there, she seemingly disappeared into thin air.
I do not understand this relationship at this point. Like, going over to give your ex-boyfriend a haircut and talk about your dating lives.
Well, because you're trying to do the thing of like, we're not together, but like, we're cool with it, but you're not. You never are. It's never that both of you are cool with it. One is acting like they're cool with it, and one actually is, right?
That's where the tension.
So she's like, yeah, fine, whatever.
Erin's social life had often caused her to spend days on end away from home. So when she failed to return that night, her mother thought nothing of it. When she still hadn't shown up by the following morning, Debbie began to get a little concerned. Normally, when Erin was going to be gone for longer than expected, she would call home so her family wouldn't worry. But she was legally an adult and had a good head on her shoulders. Debbie was confident she would show up eventually. Once 2 days had passed without any sign of Erin, Debbie was sure something was wrong. Not only had Erin not called home, she had also left her prescription medication behind, which was unlike her. At that point, her mother knew she was going to have to bite the bullet and call her estranged ex-husband.
Which they were, by all accounts, pretty okay. Like, they were fine co-parenting. It wasn't, like, a big deal, but they're just not talking that much. So, in that kind of situation, each one of them probably thinks that the other has her, right? Because they're not really just, like, when your kid's 18, you're not talking every day about the kid.
Yeah, especially with somebody like Erin, who has a really active social life, mm-hmm. or just goes off and does her own thing for a while but always ends up showing up okay.
Right.
I mean, that's one thing that if I ever went missing,
oh my God,
my family and friends wouldn't know about it for probably a couple weeks.
100.
And be like, that's weird. He hasn't talked to me in 2 months. I should probably check.
Oh, and back in the day, too, like when we were 18.
Oh, dude, you're always
calling home.
Yeah.
Or answering the call when mom cut. You know what I mean?
Aaron's parents, Debbie and Darcy, which, I mean, Darcy is a name for a guy. Fucking Canada.
God,
come
damn
on,
it, Canada. What the fuck?
They had recently broken up and moved into separate homes.
Aww.
While their father stayed in the family's original house, Aaron's mother had gotten herself a small apartment nearby. Since the split, Aaron had divided her time between her mother's apartment and her father's house, and Debbie hoped that Aaron had simply decided to go stay with her dad and forgot to tell her. And it feels like in those kinds of situations, maybe you do need to do a little pre-preparation to prevent something like this from happening. Like if you,
if she just shows up, just call me.
Yeah, let me.
Do you know what I mean? Just let me know
if she's over there. Or
if we haven't talked about her being there, or she, you know.
Because if neither parent's doing that, when the kid does go missing, a few days could pass before you realize.
Right, but
happened.
He doesn't ever know if maybe she just said, "I'm going to dad's." I know. Yeah, of course. There's a lot of things in this case, by the way. 2020.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, true. I can't place too much blame on him. But unfortunately, a phone call to Darcy confirmed Debbie's fears. He hadn't seen Aaron since she left to go visit her mother. Now certain that something had happened to their daughter, they began going through the phone book, calling anyone who might have seen her. And this came up in one of the documentaries that I watched, that one of her sister's strongest memories of the entire events was sitting there just listening to her mom, like, flip the page on the phone book and call number after number and cross them off as she went through, just calling anybody who might know where she was. It's a nightmare situation having a kid or any loved one.
Having an 18-year-old. Yeah, having an 18-year-old.
I'm surprised they have phones.
No cell phone, right, at that point?
And no, it was 2002, so not as common as they are today.
So probably not. And then she's a partier. So there was benders happening. You know what I mean? So like, nightmare.
Wait, there were cell phones.
I was going to say,
we talked about
it. It was like Nokia. It was the Nokia days.
Yeah, right.
And number texting.
But it was also like, not everyone. Like, I didn't have one.
I didn't have one till out of high school.
It was a rich person's game, I think, at that point.
Coop had three.
What the hell?
Yeah, because you're rich,
dude. I didn't get my first phone until like 2004 or 2005.
Yeah, me either.
So when that failed to turn up any leads, they called the police, and she was officially listed missing on April 27th, 2002. That's why you got to keep track of those kids. She's been gone for 5 days at that point before anybody even knew what was going on.
Every missing person case needs a badass detective with an equally
star of the show.
Badass name. The better the name, the more likely the case is to be solved, and that's true. So when Debbie and Darcy found out who was going to be in charge of their case, they both breathed a sigh of relief. The detective that would be leading the team looking for their daughter was none other than Sergeant Dallas Lockhart.
What? List that fucking name.
Hello, ma'am. Yeah. Of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. With a name like that, it was all but guaranteed that they would find Aaron. Sergeant Lockhart's first move was to run a check to see if they had any recent records of police interactions involving Aaron. When that turned out to be a dead end, they contacted every hospital in the area to see if she had been involved in any accidents. This also turned up no leads. Realizing that they might be playing the long game, Lockhart flagged Aaron's bank account so he would be notified of any transactions and began looking for suspects to question. Being the last person seen with Aaron, Michael Bridges was an obvious suspect. Within a few days of Aaron's disappearance, he was called in for questioning by the RCMP.
Imagine the shit, like the bricks that you would be shitting in that situation where you're known to have like a rocky history with your ex-girlfriend. Suddenly she goes missing and you're called in for questioning.
You can't do anything right.
There's no reaction in that situation that isn't going to make the police suspicious.
100.
What does Dallas Lockhart look like?
I know. Did you find any pictures of him?
You can find some pictures of him. It's not. I would have included him, but it kind of.
No, let's.
It doesn't match.
What do you think he looks like?
The name.
No, it doesn't match up.
Okay, so let's just like in your mind think of what he looks like.
Solid mustache, number one.
Yeah.
Got to have a solid mustache.
Huge cock.
Yeah.
Huge cock goes without saying. I mean, Dallas Lockhart is a
tight jeans, right?
Tight jeans.
Yep.
You can see
Blazer.
Full bulge. Blazer.
I like that.
I mean, I'm picturing like pretty much anyone from True Detective.
Yeah.
I could picture like
only like taller. I'm seeing like a, you know what I mean, like a
tall and
bigger.
Lean.
Yeah.
But he's kind of chubby though, because it's Dallas, so he's like he's got a beer gut because he drinks too much whiskey, right? But he's still
Dallas?
Good at his job. Yeah, because Texas is big.
Could be not slovenly. We're not talking about like what was the guy's name from
not like
NYPD
a fat piece
Blue,
of shit.
Not like a Dennis. Was it Dennis Farina?
Oh yeah.
From NY, not something like that. Even though still good character.
Yeah, he's like out of shape, but it's hot for some reason.
But still looks strong.
But strong.
Yeah, still looks strong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, let's go.
Wiry.
I'm getting turned on.
Keep it to yourself.
Michael's interrogation didn't go anything like Lockhart was expecting. He came to the station willingly, didn't make a stink about having a lawyer present, and was cool as a cucumber during the entire interview. He laid out the events of the evening up to the point that Aaron left his house and even offered to take a lie detector test if it would help clear him as a suspect.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't until they reviewed footage afterwards that something seemed to be suspicious about Michael.
Uh-oh.
Now, the lie detector test thing, what do you guys think of lie detector tests?
I think we need one here.
Yeah,
and I should be monitoring both of you so I know which one of you are lying to me about who's gonna die or
not.
Well, they'd both be going off at that point.
So lie detector test, don't ever take them, obviously. And then two, they're used almost to see, it's a tactic more than anything to see how you react to the idea of taking one.
Yeah.
And then if you take it and you say they failed, how do they react to that? Right? So
yeah.
It's not at all, I don't think, ever admissible.
It's a Ponzi.
No,
in court. It's just a tactic to kind of gauge reaction.
Yeah, whether or not they're going down the right path for it.
Right. Although refusing to take it should never, like, you know, like Scott Peterson, you know what I mean? Or something like not taking a lie detector test just means that you're smart. That's all. It doesn't like, necessarily mean that you did it. It just means that you know your shit and you're like, no.
Yeah,
not
just
doing
like
that.
Even if even if you're not guilty and you're being investigated for something, lawyering up right away, that's just the smart thing to do. Not taking a lie detector test, that's
just
the
smart
thing to do.
Well, now, if you did it,
false positives so many times.
They're going to use that in all the documentaries to show people that you actually did it, right? But in reality, just
no
don't ever
reason.
Do it.
There's no like, what's a good reason to do it? Like a drinking game?
You know, I think honestly, if you really, really didn't, but even then, dude, don't give them.
Say you did.
Just don't give them the opportunity to mess with that, right? So just don't, even if you didn't do it, no, don't do it.
We were talking about lie detectors the other night, and people that, so sociopaths or psychopaths can pass a lie detector test no problem because their vitals aren't going to be going
yes.
up or down regardless of what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
But then also people who just have a naturally high level of anxiety or, you know, people that are overly neurotic.
Right.
They can fail lie detector tests even if they're telling the complete truth. So they're so unreliable.
But that's the scientists know that. So if they're like, I think he's a fucking psychopath, they're going to ask a question that they know the answer to. And then when you lie on it and pass, they're like, yeah, we knew it.
That's a hard part about like nailing down a psychopath or a sociopath is the majority of the time they're really, really good at hiding it. Like they can be so fucking convincing that, you know, they would just be completely off the radar if they just went by their reaction alone. I'm sure there's some controls to it.
So they ask them false questions and true questions and like just see the little graph differences and maybe they will learn something.
Yeah, part of the calibration is asking a person something that's true and asking them something that's false, and they'll go through that to actually calibrate the machine itself.
No, they
the
start out with just
ever.
Like they start with just like normal questions. Where do you live? What'd you eat? You know what I mean? Just like normal things to just kind of see your base, and then something like crazy, and then like back to like a base. But yeah.
We got to get a lie detector test
Dude.
And make a drinking game.
I do it for fun, for sure.
And
do they have them
and
on Amazon?
Like a bonus episode where that'd be awesome. There's probably fake ones.
They have to.
I'm looking into it.
Okay, so when reviewing the recording, Investigators noticed that Michael's speech and mannerisms had indications that he might be hiding something. His body language was defensive, which Lockhart believed was a sign that he was lying about something. But most interesting of all was the way that he referred to Erin. He only spoke of her in the past tense, as if he knew that she was already gone.
Blew it.
Dude, you did everything else, right?
And a quick check of Michael's criminal history cast even more doubt on his claims that he had nothing to do with Erin's disappearance. Just over a month before Erin went missing, she had a heated altercation with Michael while having some drinks at his place. The fight escalated, and Michael began to strangle her. Erin's friend Lindsay attempted to break them up, but Michael punched her in the face and shoved her across the room. It was only the intervention of Michael's mother that ended the attack. The incident resulted in Michael being charged with assault and having a restraining order placed on him, and Michael pleaded guilty to the charges just a few days after Erin's disappearance.
Yeah, so he took a plea deal and just was like, yep, done, guilty.
Yeah.
Without, yeah, while she was still missing. But I think at that point, no one knew. So it wasn't like people were looking for her because it was only a couple days, right?
Yeah, this was
so the missing person report had not even been put into effect yet.
Yeah, they weren't.
They just went back as far as like timeline and were like, oh my gosh, this was like she was essentially missing at this point, according to her parents.
Yeah, nothing had been released to the press or anything like that. There wasn't any, you know, wide scale search efforts or anything. This is within. It would have been within like the first 2 weeks.
Yeah. Let's talk really quick about how Michael and Erin met. So Michael was dating one of Erin's friends. They met at a bar. They were like went out, and Michael had gotten into a fight with the friend. They were dating, but like they had gotten into a fight and he stormed off, like yelled at her and stormed off. Erin followed him, not the friend, not her friend. Followed him out there. They start talking. They realize they've got a lot in common. She just saw him yell at her friend and storm out of the bar. And she goes,
something about that.
That guy.
I like him.
So quickly after that, he broke up with her, Erin's friend, and they started dating. So right from the beginning, we've got.
So that is a red
flag.
An
interesting, a couple of them, yeah. Okay. For both of them, by the way. Sorry. But anyway, Michael's suspicious activity and history of violence wasn't enough to secure an arrest. Sergeant Lockhart would need physical evidence connecting Michael to Erin's disappearance in order to charge him with the crime. Hoping to find the proof they were looking for, Lockhart put Michael under surveillance while they secured search warrants for his house and car. The surveillance didn't reveal anything to the investigators aside from the fact that Michael was a homebody. During the weeks he was being watched, he rarely left his house or had any visitors. Instead, he passed the time locked inside his home, partaking in his favorite hobby, watching true crime TV shows and documentaries.
There are way too many people in these episodes that we do that I relate to, and they're generally the wrong person.
Yeah. Yeah. Once the warrants had been approved, Lockhart got his team together to conduct a covert search of Michael's house and vehicle. The purpose of the secrecy was to not alert the suspect to the fact that he was under investigation. The police worried that if Michael knew he was still a suspect, he would either stop cooperating or go into hiding. Luckily, Canadians aren't just polite. They're also very, very sneaky.
I was surprised about this, the way that they actually conduct a lot of the searches and things like that. They'll just straight up steal your car or break into your house when you're not there. If they have the warrant, they'll go and do it.
It's not like they go to your door here. They go to your door, serve you the warrant, let you know.
Yeah.
There, they're like, we have the warrant, so you're about to get fucked.
And they'll do it anytime, anywhere.
Yeah.
So the van that Michael and his mother shared was secretly stolen by officers and driven to a garage the RCMP used for forensic searches of vehicles. And they actually had to break into it. Like, they jimmied the lock, hotwired it, took it over to the garage, and they had to do, it's kind of like a Mission Impossible thing, which is also pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, they had to take it there, search it, and then return it without him or his mom knowing that it was gone.
Ooh. I didn't know they returned it. I thought they were just like, report it stolen. We're not going to look for it. Do you know what I mean?
They're Canadian. They're too polite.
Yeah. Oh, here's your car back.
Well, sorry about that, bud.
Okay.
Inside the van, police recovered DNA evidence that proved Aaron had been in the vehicle before. Unfortunately, confirming that Aaron had been in the van did nothing for their case. Her frequent contact with Michael made anything recovered from the van entirely circumstantial. And not just circumstantial, but also just a moot point. They already knew that she had been in the van before at that point because they'd...
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90 exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
They've been dating for roughly a year. The search of Michael's home turned up the exact same evidence that they found in the van. Strands of hair and personal effects belonging to Aaron were found inside the house, but again, this meant nothing due to them already knowing that Aaron had been there multiple times. Aside from trace DNA evidence, detectives found an empty VHS case containing Aaron's driver's license and a necklace belonging to her, but again, this was useless as evidence due to her frequent visits to the house. Only one piece of evidence was found that Lockhart considered highly suspicious. In Michael's room, investigators found an envelope on which Michael had written notes detailing a general outline of the story that he had given them during questioning. Although strange, it wasn't hard enough evidence to make an arrest.
So let's go over what we have so far. So a girl that was in a really like abusive, physically, emotionally abusive relationship. He was very controlling. Her parents saw him being very controlling. There were incidents where her and her dad were trying to leave the house and he like stops her and is like, she can't go. Just weird shit. This is over a course of a long period of time. Abusive, finally ends in a really horrible physical altercation witnessed by friend, his mom. They went home, told her dad, like, this, it's a big deal. Then a restraining order. And that's not enough. Do you know what I mean? And now we're like, we don't know if it was him. It's like, what? But I think they are also like, she's an adult and she leaves for long periods of time. So like, is she dead? Do you know what I mean? Like, they don't even know that, right? So the family at this point is very much like, no, you have to look into him. And the police are, Lockhart is like, yes, but we also don't know if there's even a issue. Do you know what I mean? So it's sort of this like obvious thing, but well, anyways, so that's where we are at this point where it's like, yeah,
During the overall search, they were getting reports from people all over the place that they had spotted Aaron. She had been reported
right. So there's tips coming in. There's like they spotted her, but she's a, as we saw, pretty normal looking 18-year-old blonde girl. You know,
probably looks like every girl in Manitoba.
Yeah. So that's the pool.
Yeah.
In Manitoba, you know what I'm saying? But as weeks turned into months, Aaron's case began to go cold for that reason, because they don't actually have evidence that she's dead. They don't know if she just left. They don't know if she's partying somewhere. They don't know if she's hiding from this guy. Him being scary could make her want to run and like live somewhere else. Do you know what I mean? So they're just kind of like, we've got to move on. So no new evidence had been recovered. Michael had stopped cooperating, and every reported sighting had turned out to be a dead end. Then out of the blue, strange letters began turning up with information about Aaron's disappearance. In the fall of 2002, four letters were recovered by police that were written by someone who seemed to have inside information about Aaron. One letter was sent directly to Aaron's mother, Debbie. Two letters were intercepted by the Postal Service and sent to the police, and one was found left in a public area. All four of the letters alluded to the author having information about Aaron, but none of them contained anything concrete. Forensic analysis attempted to gather DNA samples from like the adhesive strips on the envelope and fingerprints from the letters. Nothing of use was found. Whoever had written the letters had been extremely careful. In a last-ditch attempt to uncover the author, a handwriting expert was brought in to analyze the letter. The results didn't match anyone involved in the case, not even their prime suspect, Michael Bridges. Did you find any of those letters?
The letters were never released to the public. There's not even like paraphrasing of what was said in the letters.
There is some, a couple things.
It referenced water and.
Basically talking about the gist. They don't have quotes. You're right. But the gist is someone feeling bad about what happened. And a friend of theirs told them to turn themselves in, but they can't, but they feel really bad that this happened, is kind of the gist of most of these at this point.
Yeah. And what's crazy is still to this day, they have no idea who wrote those letters. They've never tracked down the person that actually wrote the letters, which is, well, I mean, maybe weird. They did, but.
Well, now, listen, if somebody in her family or one of his friends or something was like, dude, I know this motherfucker did it, right? Maybe not, maybe whatever, they're thinking that. Maybe that's their way of trying to impersonate him. BTK was, you know, big at that. I don't know. Maybe trying to be like, not framing, but right, just putting it more in their head. Like, you guys, this case has gone cold. It could have been a family member being like, you need to look into this again. You know what I mean? It may not even have been Michael, because who else would know the details but the family or Michael or his friends, right? So it's somebody trying to be like, you need to keep, this case cannot go cold. Like, you need to keep looking. I don't know. It's weird.
I think somebody in the family writing it, that actually makes a lot of sense, just to keep, because that those started getting sent out like when almost a year had passed. I think it was in November or something like
that. Yes, and the police had said at that point, hey, we don't have a body. We don't even know what happened to this person. We have other cases. We've got to kind of
interest in the case.
Move on unless anything else comes up. And he was probably like, Lockhart was like, let us know. Do you hear anything, right?
Said something like, about dreaming and something philosophical and cryptic. Mm-hmm. After nearly 2 years had passed, the police still had no luck finding any solid leads on Aaron's whereabouts. Michael, on the other hand, was about to experience a stroke of good luck. One day, out of nowhere, a solicitor arrived at Michael's door offering him a chance to enter a sweepstakes for free tickets to a Calgary Flames hockey game. And I assume that free hockey tickets is like winning the lottery.
Oh, for him? Oh, for yeah.
Any Canadian.
Oh, yeah.
Love the Flames, don't you know?
Yeah, I mean, but don't they have another team that's closer to them? Calgary, it seems. Wouldn't it be their team there?
Oh, no, I'm going to see the Calgary Flames, but I'm rooting for the Manitoba Moose.
Okay. Okay, then.
It's a hockey name.
If it's free.
Team name for Manitoba.
If it's free, go.
Michael signed up for the... As long as it's not going to cost me any loonies or toonies.
Yeah.
Michael signed up for the contest, and 2 weeks later, he was on his way to Calgary with a fellow contest winner named Brock. Michael and Brock turned out to have a lot in common. They were both hockey fans, they both liked to drink, and they both loved naked women with big old titties. And boy, do I like these guys.
I mean, listen. It is easy to connect with a dude, huh? Like, if you were to, like, you know, if it was, like, two gals, it would have to be, like, lots of things would have to align for us to be, like, friends, fast friends, right? Dudes, it's like, you like boobs? You like hockey? You like drinking? Hey, we're best friends now, you know what I mean?
Let's go to the strip club.
What is it for chicks?
So easy.
You don't... Yeah, what is it? It's not big.
We just don't BBC. Have those.
Like,
we don't have those
like
easy.
A Rubik's Cube?
We don't have those easy things to latch onto. It's like, oh, do you have kids? Okay, we
you
can
have
talk
kids,
about
do
that.
You want to kill your husband?
Are you married? Yeah.
I think do you
now
kill
it's
your
true crime a little bit where you can be like, do you like true crime? You know, and that can be like something. Do you like drinking wine? Cool.
Well, that's all.
True crime.
Is
do
your
you have kids?
A piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you listen to true crime to learn how to get away with murdering your husband? Yeah.
But if those were the points that you have to hit for women to be friends, wouldn't every woman be a friend with every other woman?
You'd think, but there's a lot of people that don't.
See, that's what I'm saying. They all like that, but then the rest of it is just a fucking.
Who knows, right?
Like
are you into
Goodwill Hunting?
Are you really big on Insta? You know, do you really love Instagram? Do you like to? You know, paint. Are you know what I mean? We don't have that live, you know, everyone's watching live thing, sports. We don't have the, like, there's wine.
Dude, I think I just figured out what it is.
We're more complicated, I think is what it is. Smarter and complicated. Yes?
Thank you.
I think I figured it all out based off of what you two were just saying.
What?
This is what it is. Women are more competitive than men with each other, but the difference between men and women is when two men compete, they can become best friends after. Women, it's like a competition to the death. They don't,
oh, yeah, no, you don't, you're dead to me.
You don't earn something from competing.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
With men, we can, like, fucking compete and be like, you did better than me. I'll buy you a beer.
Oh, if they even try to compete, they're done.
Yeah, that's...
If you even enter the race, I'll fucking shoot you in the head. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, so there can't even be a race.
It's not fun to compete.
It needs to be kind of like a secret race that you're both running, right?
So the whole Nancy Kerrigan, Tonya Harding thing kind of sums up that entire relationship.
Yeah, like they could have been really great friends. The amount of things that
they
had... The amount of things that they had...
If one of them wasn't playing sports, or if one of them wasn't in figure skating, they could have been friends.
I think they could have been friends. They had so much in common. They were both like competitive figure skaters, right?
They would have been best friends if they had dicks.
100. All right. What?
I got a lie detector test. I found one on Amazon.
Okay. Do you have a picture? Oh my gosh. Okay.
$189.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is this? Hook up to your phone or what's the that
it's
looks
USB,
like a hard
it has to plug into a PC. Here's
okay.
The updated electronics for Windows PC only, a real polygraph or lie detector machine for home use. Featured on TV and around the world, including Love Island and Shades of Blue.
Okay, well
imagine the amount of relationships that thing has broken up.
Yeah. We'll send this over to the boss and we'll be
see,
like we
yeah,
need
see if
it. Ross
dude. Will buy it for us.
We need it for the next show.
It's great for parties or even a bar business. Test breathing, pulse, sweat, body language, and
even
biometrics.
Even
a bar business.
All right, let's go. Okay, so now they're
Brock and Mike hit it off.
Head into a hockey game.
On the drive
two
out there.
Two good dudes.
Hit
like
it off
two
at the
competitive
hockey show,
good
hockey
dudes.
Game.
That love
then,
hockey.
After the game was over, the two men went to a local strip club for some overpriced chicken wings and a little over-the-clothes action, if you know what I'm saying.
Did we just become best friends? Yes!
The duo spent the rest of the evening drinking, laughing, and enjoying the experience of helping single mothers afford baby formula for their hungry children. So they were actually very philanthropic also.
Yeah. Charity.
Was.
Yeah.
Over the course of the night, Michael learned two things about Brock. The first thing was that Brock had a lot of disposable income. Michael didn't have to pay for a single drink, lamp dance, or hand job during the entire trip.
Ooh, they got handies too?
It's another thing that guys will connect over.
Yep.
handies.
The other thing he learned was that Brock was in the process of moving to Michael's hometown for work. Better yet, if Michael helped Brock find a place to live in Manitoba, he would be able to hook him up with some high-paying jobs.
Okay.
So Brock really liked flashing the cash, and he had a lot of cash to throw around.
We don't know what Brock does. It's just kind of like Michael sees that he has a lot of money and that he could get him
work.
Some kind of work.
Get him into the same line of work, but he was also...
And take him to strip clubs whenever they hang out.
Yeah, it was a very big incentive for Michael to get on board with whatever it was that Brock was doing, because Brock was making a good living doing it.
Right. Okay, so the next few months of Michael's life was a whirlwind of expensive dinners, cryptic conversations, and lectures from Brock about the qualities needed for the type of work that he did. According to Brock, the three things Michael would need to work in his industry was honesty, honor, and loyalty. Sounds like the mob. Brock would show Michael just how serious he was about those qualities when he invited Michael to join him on one of his shady jobs. Having earned Brock's trust over the previous weeks, Michael was asked to accompany him while he talked to a customer that Brock's boss was having trouble with. The two men pulled up to a cheap motel where Brock told Michael to wait in the car and watch for cops while he went inside. All right, he was the lookout. Fun though, right? I'm a lookout.
Oh, and for that kind of money.
Do you know what I mean? I'm a lookout for cash.
Is this story going to end up where, like, what, they're both gay and sucking each other's dicks and stab each other like those people from England?
Now, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
They're not both going to be gay, dude.
Or in denial?
Michael watched from the vehicle as Brock knocked on the door of one of the rooms and was greeted by a woman in her late 20s. After a short conversation, Brock unleashed a haymaker directly to the woman's face. So hard that blood...
Why,
he's never laughed harder in his life. My God, it's the funniest joke he's ever heard, that just punched the lady in the face.
I mean,
Joel
is like
doubled over laughing.
Withheld giggle there.
Wow. Now we know.
Always wanted to do
now
that.
We know. Now we know what Joel finds fucking hilarious.
Well, it's...
Okay, so anyways, guess what? The joke goes on. So
a Canadian doing that? Come on.
Yeah. So punches the lady in the face.
They can throw out he probably pulled her shirt over her head and then just started uppercutting her. Like a hockey game.
So he punches.
Door opens, punches her in the face. Sorry.
Shut up.
I'm trying to.
Shut up, dude. So punched her directly in the face so hard that blood began pouring from her mouth. Funny? Joel cannot stop laughing.
Pretty tasteless spot.
Brock then calmly walked back to the car and climbed in. When he asked Michael what he thought, Michael just laughed.
Good guys. Good guys.
Dude, Joel would fucking roll with these dudes. When he asked Michael what he thought, Michael just laughed and questioned why he didn't just kill her. It was then that Brock knew Michael was exactly the kind of guy he was looking for.
He was looking
for
Joel,
crazy, because that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Like, what'd she do? Just that caused that.
But you're like, that's not for you, like, in this kind of line of work, that's not for you to question, right? You just have to go, okay, I guess she did something that was bad enough for that to happen. And I don't ask questions, I do look out, and we go, right?
Michael just saw what happens to people that step outside of the lines.
Yeah, and so in some ways, yeah, very mob-like to be like, hey, come with me to this fucking hit so that you know. If you do anything, this is what's going to happen to you, right? Yep. And the brutality of it being a woman, too, where it's like, I don't care who the fuck you are.
Yeah, that's difficult. That would be difficult, but I would do it. Like, if Ross was like, someone's fucking with Jesse, and I can't tell you anything about it.
You got to
go. But there's this chick that lives here, just fucking break her fucking teeth. And I'd be like,
you show up, and it's actually Jesse.
Yeah, yeah. No,
sorry, Jesse.
Yeah, Joel's reaction is like, I've always wanted to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I would do it for a certain price. How much is he getting paid? To punch somebody?
That's the thing.
That's a misdemeanor.
We don't really know, but it's, you know, it's cash and
he's not getting paid yet. It's like he's got a sugar daddy that's paying for everything and he wants to make the sugar daddy money. So sugar daddy
with
brings him on this job.
Promise of being made, essentially, right? Like becoming a dude that's
Well, Michael's
make...
not the... I was talking about Brock. Brock is working for this guy and makes good money, can do whatever he wants.
Right.
And once in a while, he's got to punch a chick.
Brock is essentially Mr. French from The Departed.
So then Michael goes, okay, that's all you got to do.
He's also Rocky from the first Rocky movie. Rocky was that guy, exactly.
Yeah.
Rocky that's why beat the shit out of Adrian?
Yeah. He was a money guy. He would go and beat people up for money.
Oh,
and that's
no,
why
he wasn't beating the shit out of
his manager was so mad at him.
He wasn't beating
the shit
out of
him. Yeah, but they never beat up women. But anyway, go ahead.
They just cut those scenes out.
So Adrian was the one with the black eyes at the end of the first movie?
No, I'm saying that even Rocky had to beat up chicks if they owed money.
Did he do that in the movie?
Yeah, he was literally beating people up in the beginning of Rocky because they owed money to some guy he worked for. The guy that shows up in the thing.
And you don't ask questions. Yeah. Basically, he's hoping to get the job of Rocky.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wants Rocky's job.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Pretty much.
The dumb guy that beats people up for a living.
Yes.
Having earned Brock's trust on their first job together, Michael began to be included in more of these shady business deals. His next task was to accompany Brock as he picked up a sealed package, which Michael would be responsible for delivering. The only rule was that Michael could never look inside any of the packages. This would give him plausible deniability in the event that he was stopped by police. Michael carried out the task without question, earning him even more respect among Brock's business partners.
He didn't look in the. He didn't look in them.
You can't, because in like anybody who's working.
Because then you'd perjure yourself. If anything happened, you have to be able to say, "I have no idea what was in there."
Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's also a test, right? Like,
if
you're a
moment,
piece of
like
shit,
a,
you'd look.
Yeah, well, it does work double duty. If he looks inside, then they know that they can't trust him. And then if he does get caught delivering any of these packages, he'd be like, an Uber driver delivering drugs. They don't know that there's drugs in the package, but a lot of people use Uber to deliver drugs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
After their second successful job together, Brock told Michael that he had earned enough street cred to meet the boss of the operation. Should the meeting go well, Michael would become an official member of their syndicate and begin getting regular work, which is what he's been working towards this entire time. So this takes place over the course of like a handful of months.
Fuck yeah, dude. He's like, I gotta quit. I'm talking too much. It's bringing up movies, but...
Go.
It's the transporter, dude. This is the...
Yeah.
Transporter.
Yeah,
he's delivering
like any,
packages.
Look, it's like any... Departed. It's like any, like, mobster, whatever, underground... Yeah, like it is how it is. But when you're in it, I'm sure you're like, dude, this is fucking crazy.
It's probably cool
in the beginning, right?
So Michael looks like Jason Statham to me now.
Mm-hmm.
He just punched the chick in the face. He kind of feels bad, but he's trying to work his way up.
No,
Michael didn't.
Brock.
Oh, yeah.
Brock.
He saw his boss
Jason
Statham punch a chick in the face, and he's like, shit, that was fucked up, but I need the money, and I want to be cool.
Yeah.
There was only one thing that the syndicate needed from Michael to continue to the next step. If he had any skeletons in his closet, they would need to know about them in case there were any loose ends they needed to tie up. So Brock asked Michael a very direct question. What was the worst sin that he had ever committed?
So they do this for a couple of reasons, and it is pretty common, but so that they have something on you in case you want to rat on them, right?
Yeah.
So you have to tell them something so that they're like, we got your shit, so don't even think about going to the cops about whatever we're doing. And then they can keep you there with this information as well. Mm-hmm. And there was like kind of promise to like take all of it away as well.
Yeah. If
like
if
get rid of pay for any kind of expunging or get this off your record.
Yeah.
Whatever
with a big... syndicate like that, if there's any loose ends that need to be tied up when you're bringing in a new person who's good at their job, then you want to take care of that up front so it's not going to come back and actually lead to the rest of of the
Michael ring. Was resistant to the questioning at first, but once Brock assured him that there was no wrong answer, he began to open up. Michael told Brock about a fight he had gotten into with his ex-girlfriend, Erin Chorney, nearly 2 years earlier. They had begun arguing when he asked her to drop the assault charges she had filed against him. and Michael had gotten angry and pushed her. Erin stumbled and fell, striking her head on the corner of a table, killing her instantly. Michael then wrapped her body in a sheet and buried her in a freshly dug grave in a local cemetery.
Damn.
So yeah, do we go through what he actually said?
We go through everything.
Okay. So this is what he said to Brock. So Brock emphasized unfazed by Michael's story. Obviously, a man in his line of work had heard much worse. The only thing Brock seemed to be concerned about was whether or not Michael was being truthful. If the story turned out to be a lie, or if Michael was leaving out details, he would lose all credibility he had earned over the previous months. So a few days later, Brock had him tell the story again, this time with more detail. And during Michael's second time explaining Aaron's death to Brock, he did as he was asked and included more details. Brock's concern turned out to be valid. The second time around, Michael's story changed. He and Erin had indeed been arguing about the assault charges, but this time Michael admitted that he hadn't shoved her. He had strangled her. Brock chewed out Michael for being dishonest and made it clear that when it came time to meet the boss, he better have his story straight. Or they wouldn't work with him and probably, like, get him in trouble for this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, at this point, the boss is, like, this, the last step, right? And
yeah,
it's this
Brock's
thing
the,
that
Brock's
Brock keeps
man.
Talking about, like, you're going to meet him, right? So, you've got to, he's kind of getting him ready to do that.
The thing that was always going through my head when I was putting the episode together is Brock is essentially French from The Departed. Like, he's the number two, and he's like, you gotta do this before I introduce you to Costello.
But he's helping him by helping himself. So, like, if Brock brings somebody fucked up, Brock gets fucked up too. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, he needs to make sure that the person that he's bringing to the boss is going to be reflecting him in a good way too.
Yeah, he's vetting him. Michael had no intention of betraying the trust of his new employer, especially considering the amount of money he was going to make. Before his scheduled meeting with the boss, he took Brock to the Brandon Cemetery and pointed out the grave where he had buried Aaron's body. That was enough for Brock to trust him once more, and a meeting with the boss was set up a few days later. Brock took Michael to an upscale hotel where the meeting was to take place. As they waited for the boss to show up, Brock had Michael tell him the story one more time to ensure he would include all of the details. This third telling of the story was the most graphic of all. After choking Erin unconscious, Michael wrapped an electrical cord around her neck in an attempt to finish her off. When that failed, he dragged Erin into the bathroom, filled the bathtub, and held her under until she stopped breathing.
Fuck.
The final version of the story was enough to satisfy Brock. It was time for him to meet the boss. He made a quick phone call, and the two men waited for the big man to arrive.
Not long after Michael finished telling his story, the door to the hotel room opened and a group of men walked in. The man leading the group wasn't the drug kingpin Michael was expecting. It was none other than Sergeant Dallas Lockhart of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. The man Michael had been working with over the last few months wasn't a drug dealer named Brock. He was an undercover police officer working as part of an elaborate sting operation to secure a confession from Michael.
Who'd he punch?
What?
Who'd he punch? Who's the chick that took the hit to get
an undercover cop?
We'll find out.
Yeah. But we have a still. So Canada, as well as being fucking annoying and a little bit dumb, doesn't release any of their true crime shit, even though they have a bunch of crime and dumb shit happening over there. So we have a still picture from the sting. So from, I guess, the hotel, right?
Yeah, it was when he was actually being arrested.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I see them. Ooh, they got trench coats on. Should I show everybody or keep it for myself?
We've got two pictures from it. So look at the surprise on that face. Like, oh, dude.
Gotcha, apparently, buddy. At this point, he is just asking Brock, like, over and over.
He has
to. He really was. So, like, he's asking over and over, are you a police? Are you a policeman? Like, are you undercover? Are you kidding me? Like, my fucking best buddy, really, at this point? Like, so he's just asking over and over, you are a police? You're a policeman the whole time? The whole time. So he wants to know, like, did you get turned? Or, like, this was, he's, like, being like, this is the whole time? The whole time? The whole time?
Complete confusion.
Yes.
And there are hidden cameras, but it should be stressed that at this point. This is after him and Brock had been friends for months. Like, they'd been hanging out on almost a daily basis.
According to him, they've done some fucked up shit together.
Yeah.
They fucking beat up chicks. They fucking, like, stole shit, delivered packages to drug dealers. I mean, they're like, he's thinking, like, they are together. Yeah.
This is the kind of guy you could hire to, like, actually do good for the country. You do that same thing, set him up, and just send him on missions and never tell him that we all know what he did. That guy could be saving lives right now, but he's fucked.
Send the...
Who? Yeah, like, you, like, trick him into this mafia thing, right? And then instead of arresting him, you just send, like, send him to like another country to kill people for us.
I don't think he's really, like, special forces qualified.
Yeah, he's not, like,
I mean, yeah. So what if he dies?
So all right. Well, that I'd be on board with. He's more of he's more of like a really risky Uber Eats driver.
He's a murderer.
Yeah, he's fucking dumb. So, anyways, unbeknownst to Michael, every interaction he had with Brock had been orchestrated and recorded by the police department. The woman who signed him up for the contest to win the hockey tickets was an undercover officer. Brock, the other alleged contest winner, was a highly experienced member of the RCMP that specialized in undercover operations. The woman that Brock fucking clocked.
Yeah, I'm in love with her already.
Beat at the hotel was yet another undercover agent, and the blood Michael saw was nothing more than blood capsules purchased from a costume store.
Nice.
Every little detail had been a well-coordinated ruse. While Michael was busy trying to earn his stripes for the fake criminal syndicate, police were using the information they gained to build a case against him. Under the cover of darkness, forensic specialists had secretly exhumed Aaron's body from the grave where Michael had dumped her. An autopsy confirmed that she had been violently strangled, which was made evident by the broken hyoid bone in her neck. So,
it's illegal for cops to do that here.
In the U.S. it is.
Yes, we will get into all of that, and we will get into, like, how dumb Michael is, because it is a pretty well-known tactic in Canada. So if that's, like, starting to happen to you and you still do it, you're double dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he had first said that, I think he pointed to the grave, kind of, right? Or he couldn't remember.
He walked him to the general area.
And then he had sort of a idea of the last name. He said he couldn't really remember, but it was enough, right, at the time.
It was enough for the RCMP to track it down, because during the initial investigation, they had actually suspected that somebody may have murdered her and buried her in a fresh grave. So they went around and they did a ground-penetrating radar to check and see if there were any strange signs from any of the most recent graves. But Michael had actually chosen a grave that was...
pretty, like, recent.
It was still
recent. I think it was within the 6 months of... like, had just been buried within 6 months of her disappearance.
It was recent enough that the ground wasn't soft, but no grass had grown over the top of it. So he was able to dig up the top layers and bury her about a foot or two down and then cover her back up without it looking suspicious. But the only ones that the police had checked were the ones that had happened within, like, the previous week or two. When they, behind the scenes during this entire operation, what they were doing is they were taking that information, and when he pointed them to the grave where her body had been buried. They went and they took drill samples, and one of the drill samples came back with a little strip of fabric that matched the description of the fabric that Michael had used to wrap her body up.
Yes, which so then, actually he ended up preserving her body in this weird way.
Because of how he wrapped her. I think he wrapped her in plastic
like
first.
Like mummified her.
Yeah, so he did plastic first, then a blanket, which basically preserved a lot of evidence, which he didn't, I guess, obviously intend to do, but he's so dumb.
And especially considering the way that the weather is up there, you know, it freezes over for most of the year. So her body was really well preserved. They actually had to build a tent over to actually dig her up.
They had to heat up this tent over the top
of the grave to melt the ground enough so they could dig down to get her body.
So she's like super preserved.
So as we all know at this point, a broken hyoid. A broken hyoid bone.
He's not Canadian.
Hyoid.
Hyoid bone, don't you know? Broken hyoid bone is common in murder by strangulation, but exceedingly rare in cases of suicide. Even the Canadians knew this back in 2004, and I'm just throwing that out there in case there were any other famous strangulation deaths that may have been misattributed to suicide in recent memory.
Mm.
Justice for Jeffrey.
Wait, okay.
Yeah.
You need to go into that?
To Jeffrey Epstein?
Oh, okay, no.
He had a broken hyoid bone. He was murdered.
For sure. And we all know that.
And this is further proof.
Don't you get that if you hang yourself?
No.
No.
No, it pretty much only shows up with, like, a violent strangulation.
Yeah. Like if you jump off something and snap your own neck?
I don't know if it even shows up in that. It's like pressure on a very specific part of the neck.
Yeah, for, like, extended period of time, not just, like, a... It's weird. But yes.
Michael Bridges was immediately arrested in the hotel room on February 12, 2004. Ironically, during a second search of his house, police found a letter from his lawyer stating that he was at risk of being targeted for what is known as a Mr. Big sting operation. In fact, Mr. Big operations are so common in Canada that they are occasionally called the Canadian technique. The advice obviously fell on deaf ears.
Still works.
And it's illegal in the UK, it's illegal in the US because it's considered close to entrapment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they use it
in false confessions because the idea is that you're trying to impress somebody, so you may say things that aren't totally true.
That's how the lead singer of Avenged Sevenfold got away with trying to kill his wife. Because he got the entrapment fucking bullshit and got out of jail.
Yeah.
Is it? But he did still spend time in prison for that, didn't he? Wasn't he in there for
until they considered it entrapment. Yeah. And then they let him out.
Shit, that's how he got out. I wondered how he got out early.
So he's going to try again.
Immediately following Michael's arrest, Debbie and Darcy Chorney were called into the police station to get bittersweet news. After 2 years of uncertainty, they now knew that their daughter had been found and the man responsible for her death was in custody.
So we have a picture of the parents?
Yep.
There they are. Michael Bridges was charged with one count of premeditated murder and put on trial. On June 14th, 2005, the prosecution was initially concerned that the evidence gathered by the sting would be deemed inadmissible in court due to the controversy surrounding those types of operations. Mr. Big type stings had already been banned in the U.S. and the U.K. due to them being seen as entrapment, like we said. False confessions had been secured in the past due to the target feeling like their life would be in danger if they don't admit to a crime or the crime. Luckily, Sergeant Lockhart and his team had planned for this and ensured that Michael was never put in a situation where he would believe his life was at risk if he didn't confess. All of his confessions had clearly been voluntary. So they made it more like, you're not going to get this job or make this money. Not like, we're going to fucking kill you if you don't tell us this.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's towards the end of the Mr. Big. And I don't even think it's totally legal right now in Canada even.
That I'm not sure. I think they
not
still
used
can, but the
that
the
much
evidence
because
taken from
you
question.
Have to get it completely, totally right in order for it to, like, there can't be any missteps in order for it to be admissible. So
but he led him to the body. So
yeah, but also, right. So him leading Brock to the body, that's definitely some concrete evidence. But the way that the evidence is gathered, if he ever felt like if he didn't admit to something or his life was in danger,
that's entrapment.
Yeah, it's also the reason that like torture generally doesn't work as well as getting a voluntary confession, because if somebody is at risk of major bodily harm, unless they say something, even if they don't have anything to say, they're going to come up with something to say to get them out of the situation. So that's why it's really iffy.
Right. So you have to never put them in that situation. And in this, they had, like I said, they've gotten towards the end, or they've perfected in some ways this Mr. Big Canadian technique, in that they made sure that every time they were talking to him about stuff, it was like, look, if you want the job, this is what you have to do. So it's more his choice, and everything has to be voluntary. He can walk away at any time, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and even now,
covering their tracks.
Just to give a clear picture of how common these stings are in Canada, there are entire true crime podcasts that are just focused on Mr. Big stings from Canada. And a lot of them have come back with confessions, or they've had verdicts over.
They've gotten off because of it. Appeals, it's one of those things that you've got to be totally sure.
Yeah, if it leads to a body, it works.
Exactly.
If it
you have to be totally sure that this is the person, and that you like. I sometimes wish we could use that here, right? Because of like only circumstantial evidence, or you know that it's them, but they just didn't leave any fucking DNA or anything to really build a case.
Yeah.
In some instances,
Lockhart knew, dude.
It would be fucking great to be able to do this.
If you have enough circumstantial evidence leading up to it, and you just need the direct evidence of a confession.
Exactly right.
Then I think it should be used.
But in the U.S., my God, we can appeal on the tiniest little thing, so it would fucking never work. But it would be nice to at the very least, maybe the family knows, right? Or you know that it's them. They're going to get off and whatever, but they at least confess.
Or maybe you could put the weight of the evidence on par with like a lie detector test, where it's not necessarily going to be admissible in court, but it can at least point you down the road.
Now, again, in the U.S., fighting to get that kind of thing admissible, it'd be very hard.
Never happened.
But since we kind of litigate on documentaries now, just put out that documentary, dude, and done.
I looked into the whole controversy around Mr. Big Stings in Canada, and I guess the biggest issue that the Canadian public at large has with it is the fact that it costs thousands and thousands
and
thousands of dollars, and it takes months. So, like, all the money that Michael was making from Brock, that was money that Canadian taxpayers were just directly
for
in his pocket.
Strip clubs
all
and shit.
Money, yeah.
So people were kind of like, I mean, yeah.
All the dinners.
Did I just pay for this murderer to have, like, time ever?
And if it comes back as nothing, then you just gave somebody the fucking ride of their life on the taxpayer dollar.
They get tipped, they mess up, whatever, the person fucking flees, like, all that, done.
I think in America, the way they should do it is each detective gets to do it once. Like, if they really believe
Yeah, you get one free
Mr. And if you're wrong,
Mr.
you have to retire.
Big. Yeah.
If you're right, you get to do it again.
One free Mr. Big card. I like that. In 2005, Michael was found guilty of murder and sentenced to life in prison without possibility for parole for 25 years. He would have to wait until 2030 to apply for parole if it weren't for a ruling in 2021 that he qualified for that is known as the Faint Hope Clause. This clause states that any person sentenced to life with a parole ineligibility period exceeding 15 years can apply for parole once they have served at least 15 years.
I left out one part. Anybody sentenced before 2011. So after 2011, Faint Hope Clause doesn't count.
Okay. Also at this time, before trial and all of that, he was wanting really bad to talk to the parents face to face.
Yeah,
really wanted to like apologize. He really wanted to talk to them face to face, and they were like, fuck you. And never never gave him that because it seemed like he was going to try to why else would you want to do that except for to like get something like make yourself feel better by apologizing and looking at them and being like, this is, you know. So they were like, no, fuck you, dude. You're gonna not be able to do that.
I was curious about that because I saw that when I was looking into the case, mm-hmm. and I couldn't think of any reason that he would want to try to meet with them unless he was trying to get them on his
side. He's a very manipulative. No, he's just a very manipulative, fucked up dude.
And he just ego.
Yeah. So it was him being like, as long as I can just talk to them, cry, tell them I'm so sorry, because he was trying to get a crime of passion situation. Like, she just made me so mad. I wanted her to drop these charges. And like, I just like loved her, you know, all these things that he wanted it to be a crime of passion and not premeditated, but him like, you know, murdering her, keeping her in the house, which you didn't put in here, but keeping her in the house, and then going to bury her the next day. Like, all these things are very premeditated, calling over and over, getting her to the house, getting the other guy to leave. So it was premeditated, but he was trying to make it seem like, hey, he was just hanging out and things just got so heated, right? So I think probably what he wanted to tell the parents is that, right?
It was her fault.
It was just like, it got out of control. I can't believe, right? And they were like, no, fuck you. I'm not going to let you manipulate me the way you manipulated her, your entire relationship, which they saw, right?
Mm-hmm. No information about Michael's case has been made public since he qualified for the Faint Hope Clause. Although it hasn't been confirmed that he was paroled, on March 4th, 2025, a man named Michael Todd Bridges from Brandon, Manitoba, was arrested in Rankin County, Mississippi on charges of sexual battery. He is currently being held on a $100,000 bond as he awaits trial. And this was, I mean, very recent. That was just last month. Although it is unconfirmed that that this is the same Michael Bridges that murdered Aaron Chorney, it does imply that if you know a woman that is dating a man named Michael Bridges, you may want to encourage her to end the relationship.
Oh, interesting. What is this? You have a link for...
So yeah, there's one last link on there.
I got a picture of the guy.
Yeah, that's the one.
So that's the guy that was arrested?
This is the new guy
that
was arrested.
Yeah, this is the one from Rankin. He's from Brandon, Manitoba.
Okay, then go back to the...
And then let's see what he looks like.
Go back to that. Dude, that's fucking him, dude.
It's got to be, right? Like, I looked back and forth between those two pictures.
Okay, go back.
Yeah, let me make this bigger.
What, bro? What? So we can't... Because of Canada being stupid and dumb and lame and just not cool.
So many protections for criminals.
We can't... We wouldn't know if he was paroled.
Yeah. Or where he moved to after that. But from Brandon, Manitoba.
His name's Michael Bridges.
Michael Bridges.
And he's arrested.
And you look at the difference between those two pictures. Add 20
you
years.
You so guys.
Add 20 years to that picture.
The neck is the same.
Neck is the exact
look
same.
Look at
that's
that
the
neck.
Same thing
if
I noticed.
If you zoom in closer, even the shape of the cheekbones, the shape of the nose, because Michael Bridges has a bit of
yes.
a large bridge on his
and
nose.
And we have a... So from the arrest, you know... Still, it's from a VHS from forever ago.
Yeah.
It's a still from that, so it's grainy, pixelated, whatever. But even from that, you can see things. You can see hairline. You can see neck, nose,
oh, the
eyes.
Hairline also. Okay,
uh-huh,
so look at the hairline on that
guy. Uh-huh,
so
go back.
On this, left side of the hairline, little receding. He doesn't have it slicked over like he does in the other picture.
Coop.
I think it's the same.
Okay, well, then we can follow this guy at least, right? Because he's in the States where we do things
properly.
In like a normal, intelligent way. So this was, when did he get arrested?
That was just last month.
Where?
In Rankin, Mississippi. Rankin County,
Mississippi.
So he got out
he's
and
from
fled
Canada.
The country? He's
from
an
Manitoba.
Illegal immigrant.
Yeah, do we do that with Canada?
No, I think if they come from Canada, they
You I mean, know. Just and I don't want to say legal. It. I don't want to say it, Coop.
But we know why.
I'll let you say it.
Well, because they're Canadian. They're not Mexican.
They're white. So anyways, they can kind of, you know, stay if they want.
Jesus, so no, he's in sleeper agents. We can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
We could tell the difference. Get all those fucking dirty Canadians out of here.
Coop, we need to follow this case.
Dude, I was looking so hard for any updates.
No updates.
Every single other article.
That's him, right?
Copy and paste it's of got it's
okay.
It can be him.
So in this episode, that no other. There's only a few, by the way, podcasts about this case. None of them are going to give you this, which is that's him.
Two separate people. Are the same person.
That's him, bro.
How many Michael Bridges 90%. Can there be?
You wouldn't stay in Canada. You wouldn't stay in Canada. Yeah, you get the fuck out. And where would you go to fly under the radar? Mississippi?
Where would you go? You'd go to Mississippi.
You'd go to Mississippi.
That's where white people can get away with anything.
Oh, my gosh. White dude?
Tan.
Well, he just went to Mississippi. He gets a little bit more sun down there than you get.
But it's also, this image is blown out. That's why it looks like that, too.
But yeah, I mean, look at the nose. Maybe the neck is the smoking gun.
I think the neck is identical.
Yeah,
the neck, the hairline. The neck and the hairline. Hair's the smoking same. Gun. That guy.
First ones to do it.
So what we get from this case is, you know, Lockhart, a lot of times detectives have a hunch.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time they do. But they have to build a case, and especially here in the States, right? You have to have all of your ducks in a motherfucking row, because a little bit of paperwork being wrong, a little bit of whatever, if someone has a lawyer, done. The case is thrown out over the littlest shit. So would it be nice to Joel's idea? Would it be nice if every once in a while, if you're like, dude, I know he did it. You go to the judge. Absolutely. I get one. It's not a get out of jail free card. It's something, you know, it's a Mr. Big card. And you're like, I'm going to play this. I know I only have one shot. I know my job is on the line.
And it is on the line. You retire if you're wrong.
It is on the line. And the judge is like, all right, go get him. Right?
Look at this.
It would be great. I think there would be people in jail that aren't right now. Don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And there'd be people set free if he was wrong. He'd be like, dude, we got him to the point of where there's no way he did it. Because that even that person who was like, judge, give me the chance. If he was wrong, he'd be like, you got to let him go.
He's putting his badge on the line.
Yeah, he put his badge on the line and he was wrong.
His badge on the line, dude. Oh, I wish I lived in that world.
All right, check this out.
Guys.
It's very close.
It's not like, even very close. Look at the nose. So, the nose is super long like that, too. Ears.
Heavy
ear placement. You guys.
Oh, yeah. Even the ears, the neck.
Like, you have to look at where...
Like, the ears start and finish compared to the eyes.
All of it.
Yeah, the ears start and...
And how many years do we
right
have...
At the top of the neck.
Let's do... You do the math. But how many years do we have between this photo of the sting and this photo from Mississippi? So it's like 2002.
Well, he got sentenced in 2005. So
when's this sting though? That's 2002,
3. So that'd be like 2002. So we got like 22, 23 years between the two pictures.
And for them to look that much alike, 22 years.
That's
there's
crazy.
Certain things you can't change.
Yeah.
You can't change where your ears are, how your neck fucking is, right? Your hairline. I mean, he could have, if he was bald, I guess we'd have a different conversation, but like that hairline's the exact same. Exact same. If you pushed that gray hair up,
it
would be that high square, right? He has like a square hairline like this.
He's got the like Eddie
Munster.
There's
no witty, there's no widow peak at all. It's literally just like a square, right?
I mean, I think overall, there's, So aside
from this guy, overall, fuck this guy. But yeah,
well, overall, fuck this guy.
Yeah.
Aside from when it comes to like firm physical defining characteristics, obviously you've got ear placement, eye placement, the shape of the nose. Number one's probably fingerprints.
Yep.
Only one thing is more unique than a fingerprint.
Yep.
And that's the print of the Prolab.
Uh-huh. We got to see the side by side. Side by side.
Dip in ink, slap it on a piece of paper. If it matches up, guilty.
No Prolab is the same.
Joel knows that. Crazy.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull, Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern. Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.